always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Just days after the nation saw an image of an upside-down flag outside of the home of Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito in the days after January 6, a symbol of the Stop the Steal movement, a new photo tonight raising yet more questions. The New York Times publishing images of a pine tree flag outside of Alito's New Jersey beach home last summer with the words, "Appeal to Heaven." Like the upside-down flag, the pine tree flag was carried by some pro-Trump supporters on January 6 as the Capitol was attacked. Tonight, it's unclear who allegedly placed the flag and what kind of statement was being made. The flag, which dates back to the Revolutionary War, has also been associated with Christian nationalism.
4:06, and welcome into the Tim Jones and Chris Tharp show. It is a beautiful Thursday outside, and my partner, Speaker Tim Jones, is not in studio with me today. He is in the swamp. He will be reporting to us at 5:07. We'll talk to him then, but in studio with me again is Susie Moore, Deputy Managing Editor of RedState.com. Susie, how are you?
I'm good, Chris. I'm enjoying this beautiful weather. Two days in a row.
Two
for two, man. You're betting 1,000.
That I got it correct. There's a lot of big news today, a lot of big local news today. Carol Spencer, Alderwoman, has announced that she is going to challenge Mayor Tashar Jones once again. Susie, a federal judge has, what's this case with the, Christopher Dunn, the man who has spent 3 decades in prison, has been proclaiming his innocence. That's in the hands of a judge. He may get out, as innocent or get out of jail. Gore, the circuit attorney has been in favor of that. A lot of big news today. Let me tell you who our guests will be at 4:24. We'll speak to Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. We'll talk to him about these three nations that have recognized Palestine. Chris's Corner will have some 2024 update news. 5:07, as I said, we will speak with Speaker Tim Jones at 5:07. And at 5:24, a Red State colleague of ours, I think he's a first timer on the show, Ward Clark, he's a contributor at RedState.com. We'll talk to him about today or tomorrow being the anniversary of the Uvalde school shooting and the insurance payout that was recently paid out to the victims. Susan, the story we came in with, flags, Supreme Court Justice Alito. I want to ask you, Supreme Court is about to release their final decisions for the term. Are all of these attacks on Alito somehow trying to influence the court and his opinion on this January 6th court case that they are deciding? I don't think it'll work, but it just seems weird. All of a sudden, 2 weeks before the court, Alito is getting just bombed with these silly flag stories.
Well, I think it's observant to note that the timing of it, because if I'm not mistaken, the issue with the flag, the original flag issue, was from something from several years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know when this picture was taken about the appeal to heaven flag. I think it's interesting that you're talking about something that, as the story notes, you know, dates back to the Revolutionary War. Right. It's not like it was created for J6.
But you know what they'll say? Let me chime in there. When you listen to the media, they say these particular flags and symbols and images are now connected to this Stop the Steal movement of Donald Trump. That's the phrase.
As is the American flag.
Exactly.
Right. So the millions of us that have American flags flying outside our home are apparently in deep doo-doo.
Right.
No, I don't think it's if it's an attempt to influence Alito, I think it's ill-placed, because he doesn't strike me as somebody who's easily influenced. What I think it is, and we talked about this yesterday with Zach Smith, what I think it is an attempt to delegitimize the court as much as possible, because there are going to be some big decisions coming out. They were three handed down today that weren't the big ones. And we've, you know, we still got a month to go before the rest of them are all out. But there's going to be the Trump immunity case. There's going to be Murthy versus Missouri, or Missouri versus Murthy, the you know, First Amendment big tech case. Mm-hmm. There's several cases that in one way. Oh, there's the Fisher case, I think is the name of it. Or maybe it's Loper. I don't know. One of them has to do with J6 defendants. So any of those decisions that are close decisions that don't go the way of the left, they're going to try and say they are delegitimized because this justice clearly had a predisposition and should have been recused, and we're not going to abide by them because blah, 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 blah. Right. That's what that's about.
Let me ask you, judges are citizens.
Correct.
They have beliefs, they have feelings, they have opinions on issues. They are supposedly or supposed to be non-biased, unbiased, and have an appearance of that. Does this cross the line for Alito to his wife reportedly flew this flag, flew our flag upside down? Does it cross the line for him at his vacation home to have flown a flag that was flown during the Revolutionary War, even if it could be misconstrued as something else? Does this cross the line ethically, do you think?
No, it absolutely does not. And here's why. Number one, the rules of ethics, to the extent that they apply at all to the justices, don't apply to spouses. So the one that we know for sure was Mrs. Alito, that there's no bearing, there's no ethical issue there whatsoever as far as under the code of conduct. Secondly, the Supreme Court justices aren't technically subject to the federal judiciary code of conduct, but they hold themselves to that standard. And as I understand it, there's nothing even in that code that somehow indicates that you shouldn't fly a flag of some sort outside your home. Now, as big a First Amendment proponent as I am, I recognize that there are certain professions and certain fields in which there are times in which, while it's your right to express your opinion, right, doing so could create an issue for you from your job standpoint.
Does this fit that?
I don't believe it does.
Example?
No, not. I've not seen anything that does. It just gives the media something to talk about. Mm.
What would you say would be an example of a justice or a judge like, yeah, that crosses
the line? I actually
have
an example.
Okay.
So I don't know if you are familiar with Judge Beryl Howell. She is on the, I think, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals now. She's a federal judge in D.C.
Okay.
She gave a speech in November of last year to a group, and in it started talking about things that were clearly allusions to Trump while cases involving President Trump were in front of that circuit. So Elise Stefanik filed a complaint with the Court of Appeals saying, you know, she filed an ethics complaint saying, here's a sitting judge who's overseeing this circuit and some of these cases that are before her, and she's commenting on one of the people involved. And it's gone nowhere. They haven't responded to it. But that, to me, is a clear example of something that could arguably cross the line. When you're commenting, speaking, you know, about something that is pending before you, or you know is going to be before you, yeah, that's a problem. But expressing an overall sentiment, flying a flag at your home. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
I've not seen anything that convinces me that
what
crosses
if,
the line.
What if in you know, we're a very divided country right now. We are 50-50 down the line. You know, there doesn't seem to be much compromise between the two parties. It hasn't always been like this. There's been times where people are partisan, but we are more together as a nation. In times like these where we are divided and things can be misconstrued and you could be shown as biased, should you show better judgment not to do it, even though it's not, unethical? I mean, you know, in these times, like I said, I'm playing devil's advocate, everyone. I'm not making a judgment on Alito or not. I'm playing devil's advocate.
I think when it comes to like your public speaking, that's what, yes, you should exercise good judgment at all times. I think when it comes to flying a flag at your house, that's a different issue. I guarantee you we would not be having this discussion were Sonia Sotomayor to fly a, you know, gay pride flag at her house or, you know, something else that was considered a political statement. We wouldn't be having this discussion. It's only being turned right now on the conservative justices, in particular Alito, because they don't like what they perceive is going to be the decisions coming down.
You know, speaking of the House, speaking of Congress, we are seeing a lot of posturing, a lot of legislation now that is being brought forth. Basically for politics, to trying to get the advantage, not even just legislation. Speaker Johnson is getting kudos from those on the conservative ranks for kind of boxing in Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader. He has invited Benjamin Netanyahu to come to Congress and address Congress. Netanyahu, of course, who has a long history of being a supporter of Israel. He is Jewish himself, but he knows that his caucus and the Democrats in the House are anti-Israel right now. So he's, and here's the interesting thing. Johnson has given Schumer until like next week as a deadline to say if you're going to agree to this or not. So I love Speaker Johnson there, kind of outmaneuvering the Democrats there.
Right. I mean, he's kind of holding feet to the fire there. And that's fair because of the way things have been going down. I do think it's really interesting. I mean, I guess the good thing is if Bibi were to come to the U.S., he wouldn't have to worry about being arrested here. Like he just got news that he will be if he goes to Germany because they've decided to abide by the ICC warrants. So it is interesting. It is. I mean, this particular issue is really forcing people to go on record and take a stand. And that isn't necessarily a bad thing. If ever there's something to take a stand about, this might be it. So I kind of applaud that. Yeah. That's a pretty clever move.
Chuck Schumer is doing the exact same thing on that side of the aisle. He introduced yesterday or today, I think it is, the border bill, the quote-unquote bipartisan bill that they know that is not going to fail, but he's trying to help cover vulnerable Democrats and give some other Democrats some cover. Next in June, Susie, he is going to put up for a vote the Right to Contraception Act, which aims to codify protections from protections for contraception access. So we have a border bill that we know is going to fail next month. IVF has been a big issue. He's going to put on the floor the Right to Contraception Act. A lot of politics going on here in May before November elections.
Absolutely. Yes. So he's strategizing too. And I understand it. I bristle a little bit at it because it's coming from the other side, but I recognize exactly what's going on there. They think that's a winning issue for them. And so they're going to exploit it as best they can.
And then our side did it again today. House voted today on a GOP bill that is repealing the D.C. law that allows non-citizens to vote in D.C.'s elections. We know the popular refrain from Democrats, this is not happening, it's already illegal, we're a sovereign, not state, but a sovereign thing, we should be able to do this. So non-citizen voting is not popular. Americans for Citizens Voting, the organization Becky and I are with, we've done polling. It goes across all demographics. This is not popular. So I love that they are putting the Democrats on record for non-citizen voting.
50 Democrats voted with them, by the way.
Oh, okay.
That was not a party line vote.
Beautiful.
So that backs up your premise, though. It is a bipartisan thing. So those Democrats absolutely are listening to their constituents, and they know that it's not popular with their constituents.
So those Republicans doing pretty good there in the House this week? A lot of maneuvering there.
Right, when they're not like in the middle of food fights and stuff.
Exactly. And Susie, finally, as a precursor to Chris's Corner, the 2024 election news. You know, we see these polls. The latest poll came out shows Donald Trump is still ahead in 6 of the 7 swing states. And, you know, when your polling looks good like that, you think, hey, why not extend the map out and see where we can win in other areas? President Donald Trump is holding a rally today in the South Bronx, which is about as Democrat as you can get, I hear, in New York City. Is this a good use of the president's time, Susie?
It is. It absolutely is. And here's why. Number one, he's sticking around New York because of the trial, largely.
Right.
Although they aren't in court today or tomorrow. Won't be back till Tuesday. But so he's already in the area. He's a New Yorker. And you know, when he's gone and done public appearances, like at the Bodega a couple weeks ago, he gets a lot of accolades for that. He's welcomed warmly. And it's ballsy because it's saying, like, look, I'm going to go right into enemy territory, more or less. And hold court and do my thing. Yeah. And people consciously and subconsciously respect that.
And we saw the video, I think it was last week, Trump was in New York and the African-American school children were yelling out, Trump, Trump, Trump. And that's in New York. And those are African-Americans. And, you know, we've seen the latest poll show Trump receiving 23% of the African-American vote, which is just absolutely incredible. If he can pull that off, I mean, that is truly, truly historic.
He's the master of marketing, and he always has been. Mm-hmm. And he is building himself into a folk hero. And to the extent that that holds true for the next several months, that is going to benefit him well in the election.
A couple of minutes before we go to break, Susie, I want to ask you, have you been following this Christopher Dunn case at all? Some of the details of it that I've read, I haven't been following that closely myself, but two teenage boys are the ones that fingered him as the one that shot this young person on
on a porch,
I think it was. They were saying that they thought that he was part of another gang, and so they fingered him with it because of that. I'm usually when I hear stuff like this, I'm like, yeah, everybody says they're innocent. Yeah, whatever. Sure. But the fact that Gabe Gore, who I think is a pretty honest guy and is pretty straight shooter, has taken this up and testified, I think yesterday, that, there is no evidence in this case, kind of gives me pause to think that maybe this was a wrongful conviction. And I know you're not following the case and I'm not as following the case as closely. What's your overall thoughts on
this? I remember reading about it it's probably been over a year ago and I don't remember what the context was, but I remember at the time, I mean, there's been legitimate questions raised about this case for some time. Mm-hmm. And you know, the reality is mistakes are made. There are honest mistakes that are made, and then there are deliberate mistakes that are made in the course of prosecution, and there have been people sent to jail who were innocent and who are there wrongly. That's why you have organizations like the Innocence Project, that sort of thing. This may be one of those cases, and to the extent that, you know, the authorities, the people that are looking at it now say, look, this was a bad conviction and this man shouldn't be in jail. Well, then I applaud them rectifying the situation, although I don't know how you get, 20 plus years of his life back, but, you know, at least they're addressing it, so that needs to be done.
Excellent. Good discussion, Susie. Mm-hmm. Look forward to chopping it up with you, as they say, for the rest of the show. Coming up is Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation, 445 Christmas Corner. I will give you some more 2024 campaign news. And at 507, we'll have the speaker. He'll join us live from Washington, D.C. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arps with Susie Moore standing in on 101.9-94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Taiwan mobilized its military on Thursday and said it was confident it could protect the island. That's after China the same morning started 2 days of what its military called punishment drills around Taiwan. The exercises come just days after Lai Ching-te took office as Taiwan's new president, a man Beijing detests as a separatist. China's military said the drills involving the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Rocket Force are intended to test its forces' quote, joint real combat capabilities. Chinese state media said dozens of fighter jets carrying live missiles were sent out, along with warships, and conducted mock strikes on high-value military targets. They published a map of the drill zones in five areas all around Taiwan and the islands Taiwan controls near the Chinese coast.
4:28 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, and of course, much of the world's attention is focused on the Middle East and Ukraine, but China has been flexing its muscles in its sphere of influence, and we've got just the guy to talk about that next.
Steve Bucci, visiting fellow for special ops at the Heritage Foundation.
Oh, yes. What were you about to ask me?
Do you expect me to talk?
And every Thursday, as he joins us, Steve Bucci, I forgot to ask you, since we have that new theme for you, do you take your martinis shaken or stirred?
I've only had a martini once in my life. I thought they were awfully strong. So I admire Mr. Bond having it whichever way he wants it. It's a little bit harsh for me. Mm. But you know what? He's a pretty manly man. He was always one of my heroes when I was growing up. So maybe I should aspire to it now.
Maybe so. All right, Steve, China. Taiwan has elected a new president. China, it's flexing its muscles. Are they going to just keep doing that? Or are they eventually going to invade China and take them, or Taiwan and take them over?
Well, I think even money is that eventually China is going to make a decision that the time is right and they're going to go for Taiwan. Now, they do use this kind of muscle flexing. They did when they were getting close to the making a deal over Hong Kong with the Brits, you know, getting Hong Kong back. They do this sort of bullying because they think it's going to get them a better deal in the long run when the people actually do come to the table to negotiate. I'm not sure that's going to work with this new government. They seem ready to address China as an equal, and that's not the way mainland China looks at it. They look at Taiwan as their property that has just gone astray for 50 or so years. So it's a dangerous situation, let's put it that way. With all of the distractions in the world, the Middle East, Ukraine, economics, people worried about our election, other elections, could this be the time that China says, you know what, this may be the best deal we're going to get? We got Joe Biden in office. We don't know if he's going to win. Maybe we should take the shot now and see how it comes out. I don't know. And I don't think anybody can really say with any certainty. But if they do, it's going to be ugly. It's going to be dangerous. The Taiwanese will fight. I hope that we would support the Taiwanese government. But again, with Joe Biden, you don't know which Joe Biden is going to show up on a day to make a decision. And as we see with Israel, sometimes he's one Joe Biden today, and tomorrow he's a totally different one. So it's anybody's guess right now.
Yeah, Steve, you kind of touched on this. I was going to say, given that the election is in November, and given that there's no guarantee right now, that Biden will be reelected, it seems to me that the next 6 months might be the most perilous time in terms of that issue and that arena. And I guess the question then becomes, I mean, our policy, our U.S. policy is to defend Taiwan. Do we wind up in a hot war there?
It's a possibility. You know, I don't think China wants a hot war any more than we do. They have a lot of forces arrayed there. It's basically, you know, they're the home team. They can fire missiles from their mainland to Taiwan, so they don't even need their expeditionary forces, their aircraft carriers and stuff. They can just fly or shoot off of the mainland. So they have a lot of significant advantages there. But they know that if it turns into that kind of war, they don't know what our response is going to be. Could it be nuclear? Could it be, smaller nukes, not the big heavy duty ones on ICBMs? Nobody knows that. But with Joe Biden's tendency nowadays to be somewhat positive towards China, tepid to some of our allies, long term allies that are sort of out there on the end of a string, I couldn't tell you with any certainty what Biden would do. I was totally floored when, after, weeks and weeks of, trying to calm the Israelis down in their response to October 7th, but he was still hanging in there pretty tough with the rhetoric of supporting them. And then, 2 days after Remembrance Day of the Holocaust, and speaking to a Jewish audience and saying, look, even when we disagree, we've got Israel's back. There's no doubt about that. There is no movement on that. 2 days later, he announces he's not going to send them munitions that they've been expecting and they need to make their strikes inside Gaza less prone to collateral damage, and he just shut off that pipeline. Could he do the same thing to Taiwan? It's a possibility, and not a good one for the Taiwanese.
Speaking with Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Steve, Kenyan's President William Ruto, excuse me, is in town for an official state visit. President Biden will extend to Kenya non-NATO status. What does that mean?
Well, it's clearly below the status of NATO. There is not a Article 5 equivalent in an agreement like that. Article 5 means if one member of NATO is attacked, that's considered an attack on all members of NATO. The codicil that is left unspoken, that means that all the members of NATO would respond. That's not necessarily true. A NATO member can say, no, we don't want to. But it gives you that potential of a massive response. With this kind of non-NATO ally status, there's no guarantee that if Kenya is attacked, that we have to put up our blood and our treasure to support them. But it is something we would definitely consider, we would analyze, and would definitely provide rhetorical support, probably economic support. And like we're doing right now, we are providing to the Kenyan military a good deal of equipment, logistical support, munitions and weapons that they are taking with them to Haiti in the peacekeeping mission there. That was part of the agreement for them to take on that mission, that we would help them do that. And this is something a lot of people don't understand. When anybody anywhere in the world that's friendly to us does anything, it almost always comes with an additional rider that America is going to get them there, America is going to supply them, and America is going to resupply them during the course of that mission, because nobody else has that kind of logistical capability. So this is a big return to a very positive relationship with Kenya. That's a good thing. But, you know, to tell you the truth, we don't really need another client out there that is then dependent on us to protect them. We need some allies and friends who would come alongside us in a fight if one developed. And I'm not sure Kenya is quite there yet, either in their capability or their willingness to accept their end of that relationship.
Steve, one of the big stories the past few days has been the ICC issuing warrants for the arrest of Bibi Netanyahu and someone else from, maybe Gantt from Israel, and then three of the Hamas leaders. And today, Germany said, hey, you know, if Netanyahu sets foot on German soil, we'll go ahead and arrest him pursuant to the ICC agreement. What is, I realize that I guess Germany is part of that pact or that agreement, but what is driving that sentiment, do you think, from Germany's standpoint?
I don't know. Germany, some of it driven by guilt from World War II, has always been a pretty staunch supporter of Israel, but it does have an enormous and growing Muslim population there, mostly refugees and guest workers from places like Turkey, refugees from Syria, Iraq, and other parts of the Muslim world. But it also has a very liberal contingent who look at the conflict in Gaza in a very black and white and moral equivalence kind of view, which is exactly what the International Criminal Court did. By their decision, they have said to the world that there is a complete moral equivalence between the terrorists of Hamas, who perpetrated the October 7th terrorist attack, and the sovereign nation of Israel protecting itself from Hamas and pursuing its self-defense. I think that's kind of ludicrous how anybody says those those two entities are morally equivalent baffles me. But, you know, the international law community has a tendency, like it or not, to do that. They don't want any kind of war of any sort under any circumstances, and anybody who participates in one, they tend to think of as a criminal. Well, you know, they've tried to outlaw war before in the international community, and it's never worked. It's kind of a pie in the sky sort of a vision, but it, you know, they're trying to at least mitigate the suffering of civilians. But I'm sorry, if a country is attacked, to then tell them, well, when you respond to that attack, you are now a criminal as well. In my mind, it means the International Criminal Court has lost all of its credibility, because what it's decided makes no logical sense. And, you know, during our global war on terror, that same court declared George W. Bush and my old boss, Donald Rumsfeld, war criminals, and said that they would be, you know, arrested. And about a day later, Secretary Rumsfeld did a press conference, and when asked about it, he said, well, if that's their decision, I guess they can do that, but I guess we'll be moving NATO headquarters and all of its components out of Belgium, because we can't do our job if that's there and we're under risk of arrest. And with about 24 hours later, they withdrew those indictments because they realized how ludicrous that was. I can only hope that something like that will happen. But, you know, there's an incredible stream of anti-Semitism that's buried, not just in Germany, but in a lot of other places, that seems to be surfacing. We see it surfacing in America. We've seen it surface in other countries around the world under the catalyst of this conflict. But I don't see how the learned barristers of the International Criminal Court could come up with this equivalency. It just makes no sense to me.
And a side note, we talked about it yesterday. George Clooney's wife was one of those esteemed barristers, Steve, that decided on that decision to send out those arrest warrants. I want to ask you in a Israel-related question here. Norway, Ireland, and Spain this week said that they would be placing embassies in the Palestinian territories. Today, Colombian President Gustavo Petro ordered an embassy in the city of Ramallah. Your thoughts, Steve?
I think that's kind of loony when you look at the kind of people that are governing the Palestinian people right now. You know, these are people who sat there and talked about raping women, and we can rape that one, that'd be great, and, you know, calling them their sex slaves. To then say, okay, we're now going to reward that behavior by opening consulates or embassies in your territory. But I would tell them, good luck. I wouldn't want to go live in those areas. They're controlled by criminal elements like Hamas. The food can't get in there, not because it's not being delivered by Israel or anybody else, but because Hamas is stealing it and then reselling it at exorbitant prices to their own people. If they want to send their diplomats to live in those kind of conditions, I'm not sure I'd volunteer if I was a Colombian or Irish or Norwegian diplomat. You could keep that as far as I'm concerned. But they may, you know, if they want to play that game, they may have to pay a price with having to send their people there. And the other thing they might have to pay a price of is, I wonder how many of those countries use technology products that are made in Israel, because it is the technology hub of the Middle East. So we'll see which side they really want to play on. If they want a virtue signal, there might be some price both to their people and to their diplomats and their economies.
Great insights as always. That is Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Steve, thank you so much for your time and for your insight. And we look forward to speaking with you again next Thursday, which, Steve, it'll be my birthday. So don't forget to wish me happy birthday next week.
I will remember that.
I'll be 29, Steve.
Oh, young. That's good. You're a young, strong man. Like
Steve, give or take 30 years.
Give or take 30 years. Steve, have a great weekend.
You as well. Take care and have a great Memorial Day.
I appreciate that.
Thanks, Steve,
it is
too.
Memorial Day. And thanks for your service, Steve. And when we come back, Chris's Corner will have a 2024 campaign presidential update. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show with Susie Moore sitting in today on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9941 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
As a voter, I put my priorities on a president who's going to have the backs of our allies and hold our enemies to account, who would secure the border, a president who understands we need less debt, not more debt. Trump has not been perfect on these policies, but Biden has been a catastrophe. So I will be voting for Trump.
4:51 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, and the big announcement yesterday, Nikki Haley says that she will vote and endorse and support Donald Trump. Adam Kinzinger, the former congressman from Illinois, tweeted out that Nikki was pathetic for letting down those that are not Trump supporters. There was a lot of pressure building up on her, Susie, the last few weeks on her getting off the pot, basically, and supporting Trump. A lot of folks are saying that you're damaging your future prospects the longer you stay on the line. People were talking about she was conflicted because the moderates and the never Trumpers that supported her would abandon her and call her a sellout. Is this a good decision for Haley and for Donald Trump?
My instinct on it is that it is, because no matter what your personal stance is on him as a candidate, he is going to be the GOP nominee. And I think if you want a future in the Republican Party, it's going to be very difficult to mount an effective future if you've completely gone against the vast majority of the party. Mm-hmm. I think she's got the ability to turn, kind of pivot here and say, look, I was, you know, at his throat mm-hmm. for the primary because I thought I was the better candidate. Sure. But if my choice is a binary choice, if it's him or Biden, that's an easy choice. And she can do that credibly. And by 2028, that's in the rearview mirror.
She called for the president in her remarks yesterday, former president, to reach out to her voters for support. We need to all come together, paraphrasing her words. Do we need to be a big tent? Everyone,
right.
Your thoughts on that? Trump didn't seem to take that olive branch and say, yes, I want Haley supporters. He still kind of seems on the outside on that.
Well, I don't think he's ever going to make it seem like something he's doing is because someone else told him to. Now, he might, of his own accord, do a pivot next week and say, by the way, Haley, I mean, he actually did do that when the night that he won the one primary. Mm-hmm. He actually did make an appeal to her voters.
I remember that.
So I could see him in another week or two, shortly, you know, sometime before the convention at least, making an appeal to the moderates. But he's going to do it on his terms, not because Nikki told him to. So, you know, I mean, I think she's doing what she can to save face with the people that built her up and, mm-hmm. and bought into the opposition to Trump. So she's got to save face with them too.
Yeah.
So I think she's being a politician.
She is being a politician. She is, as the former president Bush used to say, she's using strategery.
That's right.
I think he would say, all right, Joy, we got 4 minutes. Let's go ahead and do Chris's Corner, sir.
Chris. And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
Starting off our 2024 election news, Nicole Shanahan, as you all know, is the vice presidential candidate for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. New York Times had a story out saying that she has partied with, quote, the Silicon Valley elite. use recreational drugs, including cocaine, ketamine, and psychedelic mushrooms during her marriage to Sergey Brin. That's from the New York Times. So I think that fits right in with RFK's kind of crowd. So I don't know if that was the Oppo research there was trying to take her down. We'll see how that goes. A Bloomberg News Morning Consult survey finds that Trump leads Biden 48% to 44% across the seven battleground states, as I have said. A new Harris poll published by the Guardian this morning finds nearly 3 in 5 Americans wrongly believe the U.S. is in an economic recession. That's their words. They wrongly believe. The bad news for Biden is that 58% of those polled say the economy is worsening due to management from his presidential administration. You know what? I can tell you, during this campaign, expect to see the DNC go back to their 2016 greatest hits on Donald Trump. Remember the Axiom tapes and the Muslim ban and all of that? The reason that they're going to be doing that is a new polling memo came out from the Democratic firm Blueprint, which argues only 42% of 18 to 30-year-old voters recall Trump's demand for a complete total shutdown of Muslims entering the U.S. The Access Hollywood tape is still the best-known episode, according to the article here. Out of the 24 they tested, 62% say they'd heard of it, and an equal percent say they were bothered by it. So we're going to see a lot of 2016 bringing back the hits because, you know, the Democrats are bleeding the young people's support. And so I guess they think this is some way that they're going to be get that support back. Donald Trump said that his priorities as president urge him to make an appeal. Oh, this is Nikki Haley. She said she's urging him to make an appeal to voters who supported her in the Republican primary. She quote, "I put my priorities on a president who's going to have the backs of our allies and hold our enemies to account. We'll secure the border." Trump has been perfect and all has not been perfect in these policies. I've made that clear many, many times, but Biden has been a catastrophe. So I will be voting for Donald Trump. So that is the end of Chris's Corner there. A little political news that you may not have heard yet. We always try to give you the freshest news here on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. 507 Speaker Stump Speech. 524 Ward Clark, a contributor at redstate.com and noted Alaskan, it has here on my sheet. We'll have to ask him about that. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.